Do you consider yourself a high achiever? Smart, driven, highly successful? I am so excited to have you. My name is Julia Arndt and I'm the host of the Stress Podcast. I will help you develop your stress resilience the same way you've developed your workplace superpowers. Learn peak performance tools to thrive at work and in your personal life. Let's get started. Hi everyone and welcome back to the Stress Podcast. I'm very, very excited to have Kristen again on the podcast. We've only recently recorded a podcast interview, I would say maybe 6 weeks ago or so now. But when we finished the official recording, we had such an inspiring conversation afterwards that I was like, we need to jump on the podcast again and talk more. Welcome back, Kristen.
Thank you for having me, Julia. So great to be here again.
Yeah, I am really excited because when we finished the recording the last time, we got into talking about a lot of different mental health issues and diagnoses. And I thought it was such an interesting conversation with you because I feel like there's a lot of stigma around these things because people are not really well educated about it. So I'm really excited to have you tell us a little bit more about the differences between different mental issues today.
Absolutely. And you make a good point, Julia. I think a lot of the time we have stigma around mental health because people don't really understand, mental health conditions and the fact that you can live a very fulfilling, successful life, personally and professionally with mental health conditions. And so, part of what we talked about last time is, how we open up the conversation and around mental health in the workplace, and we can really start to destigmatize that and normalize mental health. So I'm really excited to be here today.
Cool. Great. So I would just say we're not going to do an introduction again because people, if they want to learn more about you, they can just listen to the first podcast episode. I would say let's jump right in and maybe talk about the first kind of two big ones that everyone I think have heard about, which are anxiety and depression. Tell us a little bit more about what is each and how do they differentiate?
Sure. So, like we were talking about before, people with depression normally have anxiety with depression, especially if you have clinical depression, and people with anxiety don't always have depression and or clinical depression. So when we talk about depression, we're talking about, situations where you're feeling, unmotivated, you're tired, you're not sleeping well, or you're sleeping too much. Sometimes clarity of thinking is difficult, decision making, really just having that kind of feeling of true feeling of sadness, crying, those types of things where you just really, if it's not, especially as clinical, if it's not diagnosed correctly, therapy and getting help and medications, then it will tend to continue on. Mm-hmm. Anxiety is, something where you're feeling physiological effects, and people can also have anxiety disorders, which is basically managing anxiety on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. Can be heart palpitations, feeling nauseated, sweating, sweaty palms, feeling queasy, just having just overall worry, and your cortisol, the stress hormone is released, so it really causes these physiological. And depression as well, you can have stomach aches, pains and aches, like back pain. And a lot of people think this is normal. I actually did. I thought it was normal for the longest time. I thought having stomach digestive problems and sleeping problems was just normal and aches and pains. And it's not. So people that are listening, if you're feeling these types of things, really make sure you get in to see a therapist. I will say this. Certain medications work really well for some people, and some medications don't work well for others. So, for instance, for my depression, the medications did not work for me. Mm-hmm. However, for my anxiety, there are certain medications out there that you can take as needed, and they can help really reduce that anxiety within literally like 10 minutes. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What I always think when I hear about medication is that, I actually did a YouTube video about this as well. And there's a podcast episode on my podcast channel as well. And, I'm always very careful with medication. For me, it's like kind of my last resort because I always think, okay, I've been suffering from severe anxiety. I was diagnosed with depression and
Medication was never really an option for me because I was always thinking, well, if something is going on in my life that I feel this way, like I need to address that part instead of just, you know, kind of tricking my body into thinking that everything is well, because I feel like might that not just, you know, kind of make things worse over the long run?
You know, it's such a good point you make. And, you know, and we always talk about this kind of generic thing we always say, but really, truly getting exercise, eating healthy and sleeping well are so important for people with depression and anxiety. And to your point, when I was taking medication, what it did for me is it clouded my emotions and my thoughts. Mm-hmm. So I really couldn't work through what the issues. And again, you know, people with clinical depression and clinical anxiety like myself, you really do have to manage it, and it's very manageable. But making sure you're diagnosed correctly and you're doing those things such as the mind and body connection we've talked about before, like exercising and sleeping and eating healthy. I have insomnia, so I have morning and nightly rituals that I do that really helps to help my sleeping patterns and also feel refreshed in the morning. And then my morning rituals really help with that mindfulness, mindset, gratitude, those things that really help when you have depression. So it's important for people, and we talked a little bit about this in the last podcast, it's really important that people have their own rituals that help with the sleep, and also, you know, morning rituals that help with getting your day started off. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, you can, you know, people with depression oftentimes, the mornings are difficult because that's when your cortisol level is at its peak to cause depression. So, you know, for people that are listening, if you're wondering why sometimes in the morning you feel just kind of icky and kind of like whatever, that's because the cortisol level is there. And that hormone that releases the feel good feel hormones aren't kicking in until later on. So having something structured and some rituals to do in the morning, so important for people that have depression and anxiety.
Mm-hmm. And so I need to clarify that. So you said that the medication clouded you to help you work through things, or the other way around?
For me, it clouded my emotions and my thoughts. So it was kind of like suppressing me working through things. Now, that's not, you know, to your point, I'm like you. I'm very careful with medications because unfortunately, I went to some different doctors that put me on several medications at the same time. So they were mixing medications. Mm-hmm. And it was, I mean, you know, I'm not trying to, you know, make exaggerate, but honestly, like, I sometimes wonder how I got through work. Because it was just, I mean, it was so, there was, I mean, at one point, 5 medications. Can you imagine? No. I mean, it, you know, I have a really high tolerance for pain in my body, and my immune system's pretty high. But even for me, I'm like, I started going, I need to be my own doctor because my body and my mind's telling me this is not working.
Yeah.
So for those out there, you know, when we're talking about these types of mental health conditions, we really need to be our own doctors. If our minds and our bodies aren't feeling good from medication, then we know it's either not the right medication or it's not working.
Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how you figured out. I actually wanted to ask you that as well, if that's the way of how you found out that, you know, the medications weren't working for you, that it was more like a intuitive feeling that you were like, it's not working, or...
It was intuition. It was also the fact that I just... Like I didn't feel like, I mean, I felt weird, you know, it was like, I wasn't able, I mean, my mind wasn't, I didn't feel like myself. Mm-hmm. And then I started thinking to myself, every single time I'm introduced to a new medication, cause it's the newest one out there. So a lot of times, you know, I always say people, you know, going through this for so long, I am truly became my own doctor, and I decided that, you know what, I'm getting off these medications and I'm going to see how this works. So the only thing that I take is for anxiety. And I think for the most part, people that have clinical anxiety normally need to have something to help them in case they have an anxiety attack. Mm-hmm. And then they can take that. And again, it usually kicks in within 10 minutes. So I'm not a doctor, so I'm not saying people should take one medication or the other. So disclaimer there. But for me, I have it in my purse. And in case something goes down, I need to take one, just, you know, or half of one to kind of bring things down. So I always just caution people, you know, if you're feeling anxious consistently all the time, then you definitely want to go and see a doctor to see what's going on and see if they can help you with that.
And can you explain why people with depression definitely also have anxiety, but it's not necessarily the same formula the other way around?
Yeah, I think a lot of it, with depression, a lot of the feelings that you have with depression cause anxiety. Feelings of, sadness, fear. People sometimes have agoraphobia, they're scared to go out in social settings. Sometimes people get claustrophobic who have depression. So that's where the anxiety starts to come in. People with anxiety don't necessarily always have depression, because people with anxiety could be something, and it might be situational anxiety. It might just be a situation they're in that's causing, maybe at work, where they're having major anxiety consistently for like 3 weeks due to a project or due to maybe their management or something like that. But having an anxiety disorder doesn't necessarily mean you're going to have depression. But again, it just, depression, anxiety pretty much go together. I really haven't met somebody with depression that hasn't had some type of anxiety. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily having an anxiety, a clinical anxiety disorder or condition, but some type of anxiety every now and then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm thinking about this, especially in the workplace as well, because I feel like if people have depression, they feel sad, they feel like low energy, right? They are like super burnt out. And then they basically, I feel like you almost have anxiety to still give you those like stress levels and stress hormones to actually perform, right? So I feel like what I've seen a lot, and from my own, personal experience, but also obviously working with other people, is that there is that mix of depression and anxiety, especially in the workplace, because, there might be things going on that you're not happy with. So that, brings you down. But then, in the morning, because you're a peak performer and you want to get things done, like the anxiety kicks in and it gives you actually that energy that helps you sustain that for a while as well, right? Like, I mean, I was probably anxious for a year and a half. Like, I didn't even know what anxiety was until I was diagnosed with it officially. But for me, it was always like, I've had this just like flutter in my stomach. And I just felt really nervous and like as if I like would just like, have a talk in front of 200 people in 5 minutes. That's kind of how I would wake up with that kind of a high stress level. And I think it makes sense that, depression and anxiety come hand in hand, especially when we talk about burnout in the workplace.
I think too, you make a really good point about burnout and what happens, because you and I have discussed this. We've both been through it. Mm-hmm. The anxiety kicks in and you keep going and going and going and you don't. And in fact, I think in one of your podcasts, I remember watching one of your podcasts, you're talking about this. What happens is your body kicks in and you're, like you said, your adrenaline goes, and then you're just going and going and going and going until you just can't do it anymore. And we talk about burnout, we talk about everyone, there's a certain amount of stress that everybody has. That's a good stress, right? It gets us to do what we need to do. And then there's onset, continual stress that keeps happening. Then there's consistent daily stress that turns into anxiety. And then that's when we get to burnout. If we continue going and going and going and going and going and don't stop. Yeah. And as you and I discussed this before, it's not a couple of days to get over burnout. You actually have to take time off to address the trigger and stressors.
Reset it.
Yes. Yeah. And you have talked about that in your previous podcast too. So for people out there, if they're feeling that way, I mean, I literally, I tell my story. I literally was in a situation like you're explaining. I got to my computer and I couldn't even read what was on it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I couldn't even comprehend. Mm-hmm. And I brought my assistant at the time. I told her, I said, I just want to let you know that I'm calling my doctor to go out on FMLA. I knew right then that I had reached my max, and I knew what it was. I knew it was burnout, because I've been through it twice. Mm-hmm. So, and I pushed myself again, and I said, never again. When I know now what the signs are to look for. And so since then, I've never had an episode like that, but it took a good, probably for me, I don't know how long it took for you, a good probably 2 months.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit more about like what you identified as your signals that you know now are like the alarming signals for you to pay attention?
Absolutely. It's like you said, Julia, it was the consistent anxiety, mm-hmm. not sleeping for, and this is a true story. I actually went 8 nights without sleeping.
Wow.
And that's pretty, and I got to the point where And I'm not exaggerating. I'm like, I just kind of want to fall over so I can go to the hospital. You know, it's like, and I think part of it, you know, when I talked to my therapist, when I reached burnout, she said, part of the problem, Kristen, is that, you know, one of my top strength finders is responsibility. Mm-hmm. So because I felt like I had to, you know, I was responsible for everybody. So again, we talk about this all the time. I'm like doing everything for everybody else, but I wasn't taking care of myself. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't doing the self-care. I wasn't, you know, exercising like I need to. I wasn't eating right. I wasn't sleeping. So these are all signs. And then all of a sudden, you're like you said earlier, every day, not just once a day, every day, all day, I had anxiety. Mm-hmm. And it was just continual. So mm-hmm. that was really the signal for me. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm this is happening again. And I'm like, if I don't take some time off, then I'm going to reach my max. And so I was in the process of talking to my therapist. And then that day happened where I got to my computer and I couldn't comprehend what was on it. So it's pushing yourself consistently with high anxiety all the time. Those are the real indicators for me. The continual, the you know, stomach aches, the digestive problems, the pain and aches, you know, the heart palpitations, just all that. I mean, all the sweat, you know, just constantly feeling that way. And it was, and it wouldn't go away. And it was just like, oh my gosh. And this is something that I need to address. And that's when I really got into the CBT, the cognitive behavioral therapy. Mm-hmm.
And when you took like a month or two off each time when you experienced burnout, what would be the first things you did then?
Oh, I you know, that's another great question. I sat down and I literally, when I was in therapy, this is when I started building these, you know, developing these CBT techniques for myself. But what I started doing is looking at what is self-care? What do I need to do to take care of myself? So the first thing I did for the first week is I just completely rested and just didn't do anything in terms of, I mean, I exercise and all that stuff, but I didn't do anything in terms of, you know, anything that was arduous or difficult or whatever. I just let my mind just let myself go and just mm-hmm. rested the first week. That's all I did. Mm-hmm. And then I truly put a self-care plan in place for myself and slowly but surely was realizing that the mind and body connection is so, so huge that the exercising and the eating right and the sleeping. And once I got on off of these medications and I got on the one for anxiety and sleep, that really started to help me. Mm-hmm.
And is that what you're doing now as well to just kind of keep yourself in check on a regular basis and not burn out anymore?
Yes. I mean, self-care is, I mean, we talk a lot about that all the time in our different, you know, posts and content. Mm-hmm. There's so many different things you can do for self-care. I mean, you know, it's important to have, you know, your tribe, you know, support system. Again, mind and body connect with exercising, you know, understanding, you know, that we've got, it's called the vagus nerve, which goes from our brain down to our digestive system. Keeping in touch with your mindset, making sure you're being mindful and you have your journaling, you know, you have gratitude, things that really promote that feel good hormones to be released, which mm-hmm. is 70% of the serotonin comes from our digestive tract. So really making sure that you're staying on top of how you're feeling on a daily basis to manage it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's really the biggest problem when people burn out is that they're not connected with themselves anymore and they ignore the signals, because I think it's also scary to look at those signals at the time, right? Like I can tell, like all of the things you're saying, like sleep problems, digestive problems, like pains, aches, like heart palpitations. Like I'm like, yeah, yeah, yeah. I can relate to this. I've experienced this. Yes, check. And it's like, you know, I think it is so slowly, like it comes in so slowly, happens so slowly that I didn't really question it for a really long time, honestly. It was just my new normal. It was just how I was feeling, you know? And and I think it's just really interesting to talk more about it and to pay more attention to these signals. And it's actually one of the exercises I do a lot in my workshops as well, that people just have to write down, okay, what are my early warning signals? When do I know that I'm starting to feel super stressed out? Because I think that's the first important step that you can take in order to be more mindful. And I think it's really interesting as well that you say that you had to take time off in order to like reset. You know, I oftentimes talk with people as well that are like, I can't take time off. Like, this is super important. Like I'm the only breadwinner, things like that, right? And they're always like, can I overcome this without taking breaks, right? And I do want to address this as well, because I think it's really important for people to know, because I know that, you know, not all everyone has like the privilege to maybe go on a medical leave for a couple of weeks, is to really, really, really like sit down and think about what is really important right now and what is not. And then, you know, kind of free up your schedule to create this, that space to, you know, dive more into who you are and what's been happening and why you are feeling the way you are and what you can do in order to create these new routines in your life.
Yeah. You know, I always say self-care is self-preservation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we need to make sure that we're taking care of ourselves first and foremost. And, you know, I always say that, you know, when I'm especially in corporate, if you are feeling a certain way, and it's just not going away, you've really got to think about, what does that look like for me? If I keep going and keep going and keep going like this, how am I going to end up? I'm going to end up having to take 2 months off. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. you know, having that transparency. And one of the things I also wanted to bring up quickly too, one of the signs that I think people really need to understand about depression, you start to isolate yourself from people. Mm-hmm. And when you start to isolate yourself, it makes you more depressed. So I think that's another big, you know, for people out there that are listening, if you're starting to, you know, you're isolating, you're not kind of doing social things, you're starting to just retreat, that's yeah. another big sign. So I want to put that one in there. Yes. But, you know, as far as, you know, the workforce, having we talk about having transparency with your manager and leader, because if you are feeling a certain way, and again, I know there are people out there that have managers that, and I went through this myself. So I'm speaking from example. I had a the two burnouts I had were under micromanagers. Mm-hmm. And in this new way in workforce that we live now, leadership has to really take a step back and realize how are they leading? How are they leading their team members? And one of the best practices that leaders can do is be transparent about their own self-care and possible anxiety and mental health condition or duress, and share best practices on how they take care of themselves, and then have their team members kind of buy in. And that's a really great way in the workforce to build up respect and trust and transparency. And so I think, you know, I say that for anybody listening, you know, it's so effective and impactful to be transparent with your leaders and your coworkers, and that builds a tribe. And, you know, we talk about in the workforce, even having monthly meetings around just talking about how things are going within mm-hmm. their lives, right? And making a holistic approach. I'm working on a project with a gentleman where we're looking at, we call it the 5 R's, where we're looking at a workforce framework to bring into corporations to look at, you know, relationships, you know, risk mitigation, different types of things we can do where we're addressing the language that the workforce speaks. Because people sometimes still shy away from mental health, right? They're like, we think it's a weakness. We think it's a this, we think it's that, which is completely the opposite. When people have mental health conditions, they have to grind more than anybody. They have to push through more than anyone. It's they're actually very strong. So reaching out for help is a strength, not a weakness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm glad you're saying that. Let's talk about, so we talked about anxiety, depression, burnout. What else? Bipolar, you mentioned earlier as well.
Yeah, so with bipolar, there's bipolar 1 and bipolar 2. And bipolar 1 is where you really go through manic states, true mania states for a period of time, and then you go through depression. And bipolar 2 is where you experience depression and have something called hypomania, but you haven't actually had a manic episode. Mm-hmm. So people that usually people with bipolar 1 usually do need to take medication just because it helps with the mania stages, because sometimes the mania stages can last for weeks. And, you know, it's you're kind of on this high. So, you know, people that are diagnosed correctly, again, people that are diagnosed correctly with bipolar, I mean, they are very successful in the workplace. Again, you know, again, it's yet another mental health condition that completely can be managed. Mm-hmm. So, you know, but that's another big one we talk about. The two big ones are depression and bipolar. But again, it's, you know, always say, you know, when people have a mental health condition, I never say I have such and such. I say I was diagnosed with such and such, because that makes you not your mental health condition, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. You don't identify with it. And a little bit what we talked about in the last podcast episode was PTSD. I would like to address it as well, even though I don't think it's an actual mental health condition as such, right? But it's more like a experience or therapy.
Yeah, it's a really, so thank you for asking that question. So as you know, I have PTSD. So PTSD is a neurological condition. And I want to say that, and I want to emphasize that, because when we talk about like firefighters, EMTs, people in healthcare who see trauma on a daily basis, you can actually get secondary PTSD, even if it's not. And what happens is, you know, you have triggers. So when we talk about triggers, they can affect our sense of smell, our touch, what we see, you know, how, you know, those type of things. And, you know, it can be I call it the umbrella, because it's a neurological disorder. Underneath that can oftentimes fall depression and anxiety, because it is a neurological disorder that causes your neural pathways to disengage. And that's what causes the depression. So when we talk about neuroplasticity, the science behind the brain, that's why we talk about that a lot. Because when you do CBT or dialectic, you know, whatever works for you, that increases and strengthens our neural pathways, which is our communication between our neurons and our brain cells. So that's what PTSD is. So I always want to emphasize that, because a lot of men and or women that are in, you know, who have PTSD think, you know, oh my gosh, it's a neurological disorder that can cause the depression and anxiety or other possible disorders. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But I do want to emphasize this too, is that, you know, people with PTSD can absolutely manage their triggers. I mean, I keep saying manageability, because it's very manageable. I've managed, you know, with my coping mechanisms and things like that, that I know I have coping mechanisms people don't even know that.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So, you know, I have them at the ready, you know, when I need to use them. So,
yeah. So just to clarify, so PTSD stands for post-traumatic stress syndrome.
Yeah.
And can you explain to us a little bit more, like how that comes up for you? Like, how do you know that you have PTSD?
Yeah, so PTSD, you know, can be caused by experience of trauma. It could be, you know, a car wreck. It could be sexual trauma. It can be trauma, like, you know, a lot of people, like I said, EMTs, the police department, firefighters, they see those things on a daily basis. So that can cause that's even though it's not trauma to them, it's traumatizing to see these types of things. Mm-hmm. So, you know, mine was, again, it was caused by trauma, and, you know, it can, you know, you can have night terrors, you can have things that bring up these different triggers. And, you know, or again, like I said earlier, it could be a sense of smell. If you smell something or you see something, a lot of people in the military, I knew a gentleman in the military who, whenever a plane flew over, it would trigger him, because he, you know, he had been in combat. So a lot of the military, you know, 7% of the military is some people, 7% of people in the military, but 20% have like suicide ideation in the military. So that it's really caused by that trauma. And so making sure that you're able to get ahead of your triggers with coping mechanisms is so important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one thing that I also want to mention is that, I had a conversation, a really interesting conversation with my therapist at the time when I was diagnosed with burnout about PTSD as well. And it was something that I didn't, like, again, I think it was really helpful to have therapy and to talk with someone about these things, because sometimes we just, you know, we are living in our own world and reality, and we don't know, you know, what's right and what's wrong and what's natural and what's reality and all these different things. And she actually told me that I had PTSD because my dad was drinking when I was young. Like, he wasn't an alcoholic, but he was just like, my parents always had a lot of fights about him, you know, going out and partying with his friends. And that got triggered within me when I had a partner that was acting in very similar ways. And absolutely. Initially I didn't know why I was every time so extremely triggered when it happened. And then she kind of opened me up to it and was like, well, it's, you know, like, we kind of made that draw that parallel between my dad and him. And it was really eye-opening for me to be like, okay, you know, this is PTSD from like my past and from like my childhood growing up. Like, it doesn't have to be a super traumatic experience. Like, I never something traumatic happened in that experience, you know.
Right.
It was just of how I perceived it as a child and how I carried it into my adult life, and then how I projected, I guess, my fears that I carried as a child into like my partnership, you know, with the person at the time. And so, yeah, I think that's why I think it's always so interesting to just explore and understand yourself better and pay attention to the triggers that you get, because there's usually always a reason, right? I think it oftentimes comes from childhood that, you know, as a child, you just didn't understand correctly. And then, you know, there's a lot of fear anchored within you. And it really helps to resolve these things. Like, now I don't have that at all anymore, you know, like, but it required, you know, like 32 years of me living my life and going through these different experiences and identifying it in order to kind of move past it and be like, okay, I can actually also heal from that. You know, it doesn't have to be always a trigger for the rest of my life.
You made such a good point. If in so much of our self-limiting beliefs and the fears start in childhood. And if we don't, and you don't have to have PTSD for that. I mean, if we don't resolve those and don't know what those are, the littlest thing can trigger you. Mm-hmm. So like, if you don't address what that trigger is, to something that doesn't seem like a big deal to somebody else, mm-hmm. can trigger someone else. Mm-hmm. Right. Because they haven't, like you said, they haven't, you know, if you're to your point, if you're reacting a certain way to something, it's over extreme or something doesn't feel right, then you're exactly right. There's something that's not resolved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think
a good example of someone who can move past, you know, that's kind of considered secondary PTSD, because you moved past and resolved it. And so now you don't have PTSD. People with PTSD, you know, continuously
with actual traumatic experience.
Exactly. That's where you can manage that. Mm-hmm. But see, you went through resolving it, and now you healed from that. And that's a really good point to kind of express the difference between the two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely. I think it's really important to mention that there's all these different nuances, and there's no right and no wrong, and no, this is what you need to do, right? Like, I think this is kind of the power of all of this, is that you need to find kind of your own path of how to address it, how to heal it, what works for you, where does it come from, you know, how do we project? I think projection from the past into our present and future is such a powerful thing as well. And becoming aware of that, of being like, hey, this feeling that is coming up right now is actually something that happened to me in the past, but it has absolutely nothing to do with the situation or with this person in my life right now, is, yeah, can be so eye-opening to address and identify. I'm trying to think, are there any other mental health issues? I mean, we have obviously addressed the most important ones.
Right. I will mention one more, and those are panic attacks.
Yes.
So you can have panic attacks and not anxiety. So what a panic, I've ended up in the hospital twice for panic attacks. And the first one, I seriously thought I was having a heart attack. I mean, and everything started spinning. And I remember I was at a movie theater, and I want to tell the story just for people that might have experienced this and not know what it is. I was in a movie theater, and I left the movie theater, like the movies, like three times. My head was spinning, and I wasn't feeling well. And I had a friend with me. And then I finally, like, okay, I'm going to get some fresh air. Well, that didn't help either. And then so I got in my car, and I thought, I need to drive myself to the hospital because I thought I was having a heart attack. Well, I couldn't drive. So this gentleman stops on my car, and he goes, "Ma'am, are you okay?" And I'm like, "No, I don't know. I feel like I'm having a heart attack." He's like, "You don't look well." So he said, "Can I call someone for you?" And I said, "Yes, please." And they called at the time my parents, and they weren't available. So then he called 911, and the EMTs got me, and they knew I was having a panic attack, but I didn't know. I thought I was having like a heart attack. So no, ma'am, okay, you're having a panic attack. But when they hooked me up to the EKG, everything was all of my symptoms of having a heart attack were kind of there. So that what it does is it makes everything go up. But again, panic attacks are manageable, can be managed as well. And just because you have panic attack disorder does not mean you have anxiety. So panic attacks, what happens with a panic attack is it will just come on really fast. Mm-hmm. So, you know, so what happens is literally like within 10 minutes, you're in full panic mode, attack mode. If you're not able to cope and bring it down. So I have coping mechanisms for that too. If I feel it coming on, So that's what I wanted to bring that up. And that, that often occurs with PTSD, because when people experience a trigger, oftentimes it starts making people panic. So that's another one I wanted to bring up.
And tell us more about your coping mechanisms when you can feel that a panic attack is coming up.
Absolutely. So, you know, the typical breathing exercises are so effective. So when I'm feeling, and I know the difference between a panic attack and anxiety. So like when I'm feeling a panic attack, it's like I said, it comes on and come on within like about 5 and 10 minutes. Breathing exercises are huge. That's the biggest one for me. Meditation every day is something that really helps with panic attacks, because it really, again, when we talk about panic attacks, we're talking about physiological symptoms that are occurring. So everything we can do to be present, mindful, daily, those morning rituals, those are my coping mechanisms to help my anxiety in any kind of panic attack. I haven't had a panic attack in years. And so, you know, because of these coping mechanisms that I use. But so what people need, people that have experienced this or feel like they may have are experiencing it, having these morning rituals, nightly rituals, meditating, being grateful, journaling, getting what's up here out on paper. I always tell people, say it out loud. And everything you can do, journal, write, say it out loud. And then, you know, self-care is going to help with those panic attacks.
And I just want to highlight again as well that with panic attacks, same thing, right? It's like oftentimes, like I have a friend, a really close friend of mine that experienced a panic attack a couple of years ago, and she told me about it. And like, you know, she was super, super shocked. Like she's this super strong peak performer, great, you know, great career, great life. And she was just always go, 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 go. Like she was always under super, super high levels of stress. And I think it took her really by surprise when she had a panic attack. She was actually traveling for work, and she thought she had a heart, like she's having a heart attack. And she was like, you know, she was like super afraid to lose her life. Like she went through like a couple of days of feeling really, really, you know, really bad. And yeah, and it was just, again, such an eye-opening moment for me as well, personally, because I was like, it can literally happen to anyone. And like, we are looking at these people now, at our friends that are living these like amazing lives, that are like having a super great career, they're traveling for work, they have a great personal life, right? They have family and friends, and maybe they have another side business or whatever they do. And we look at it from the outside and we think, wow, they're so strong and they manage everything so well. But I think, again, like it requires a lot of mindfulness, I think, to sustain a lifestyle like that, and to be like, and to kind of take back and to be like, okay, I am feeling this way right now. What can I do to counteract that? Right. Like I am still going through anxiety moments, not panic anxiety attacks, but like just like moments where I feel like I have really high anxiety. Sometimes I wake up in the morning and that for no reason whatsoever, I just have huge anxiety. And, you know, obviously it's usually my thoughts, right? It's like thoughts of like things that are happening in my life. And I am really, really aware, obviously, now, like, okay, I feel this in my body. Okay, what can I do? You know, like how do I start my day to basically decrease the way of how I feel, to not stay in that state as well for like the day and for like weeks to come? Because I feel like, right, when we're talking about neuroplasticity and brain health, we are getting wired to that it's normal to feel this way, right? And then that's that chemical process that every morning when I wake up, I have a thought, and that thought produces kind of my anxiety. And that's how the state I am operating from throughout the rest of the day. And I think it's really important to know that you can actually break that, that, you know, there are tools and there are ways to become aware of the things that are happening, like become aware of the thoughts that you have, become aware of the patterns that you have created and that are hardwired in your brain, but it doesn't mean that you cannot break it. And, move
through it. Yeah, I mean, Julie, you said two spot on things right there. Mindfulness is huge because it allows us to live in the present. So much of what causes anxiety and is the fear of the unknown. Mm-hmm. So we need to take that power back and empower ourselves. And by doing that, by being mindful, living in the present, that helps. That's one of the biggest reducers of anxiety that I can express. And that journaling and being having that gratitude. And again, you know, in the mornings, again, that's when our cortisol and all that stuff is at the peak for feeling depressed or anxiety. So people that have, I call them the UGG mornings, that's why. It's actually, a lot of it's chemically based, to your point. This is a great conversation. I mean, this is what needs to be, to me, needs for being the workforce. That people
I think so too. Yeah, everyone should listen to this. Yeah, no, for sure. Because I think, again, I think that's just so many feelings and behavioral states feels so normal to us. Like, you know, like we both talk from experience about this, but like, yeah, for me, it was months and months of feeling that way and like not thinking anything of it. Like just thinking that that's what the absolute normal thing in the world, you know, until I've had, like you were saying, you know, like that you just want to fall over and like go to the hospital to kind of make it stop. Like that's definitely something I had too, where I was like, I just want to like, you know, have a car accident or like just have something happen to me so I don't need to go like go anymore and be in the cycle and feel this way.
And I think a lot of people feel that way. I think a lot of people feel that way. They're like, I need to keep going and going and going because look, we're both very strong women. We're very strong people. Yeah. And it has nothing to do with weakness. And I think that when we talk, that's what opening up with this and talking about this is where I think people are going to feel good to know that you don't have to get the point where you feel like you fall over or get in some kind of accident so you end up in the hospital. So
or have suicidal thoughts.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Or so you don't have to tell anybody. Like, you know, that's the whole point of talking about mental health. So we don't get that. So workforces and people in the workforce, leaders and employees and teams and organizations understand that like I said, I went through it twice. You don't have to even go, you should never even have to go through it once. I mean, you know, And so being transparent and trusting in the workforce and personally as well is so important to have that tribe and tell people, talk about it. Because I have PTSD, depression, and anxiety. I'm a very strong person. Yeah. So I like to share my story for other people to hear because you can absolutely manage what we're talking about today and manage that anxiety, that depression, manage those triggers.
Yeah.
It's very manageable.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think what people always forget, especially in the workplace, for some reason, I feel like you like have the organizational piece on top of it. And people feel like we are all machines or something. I think we all forget that we are all human beings and we're all going through it. And we all have things that happen to us. We all know someone that has had burnout or a panic attack. Like, I feel like it's become almost so normal, kind of scary normal at the moment. And the more we open up about it, and same thing for me as well, that I'm like talking really openly about having thoughts about self-harming myself. Like, not that I ever followed through on it, but like, I was so burned out. I didn't really know how to stop it. And I was just like, I wish like something would happen to me so I don't have to continue in this cycle. That was actually one of my biggest, I must say, that was one of my biggest eye-opening moments as well, where I was like, okay, I need to go to the doctor and figure out what's going on with me, because that was scary, right? Having those kind of thoughts is extremely scary. And, you know, obviously at the beginning, like 3 years ago, talking about it openly for the first time and admitting what was going on in my head was really scary. And I almost felt like, you know, even like some of my closest like friends and family members, I think they still didn't take me super seriously because I was such a strong person and I was like living this like super, you know, amazing life from the external perspective, that they didn't, you know, they were like, really, like, you really have that? Or like, you know, they kind of laughed about it, or like, and I'm like, no, this is like a real issue. Like, I need to address this, you know? So it's important to talk about it. And I think it's really great. Like, I've talked to a couple of different companies. Like, I know that Snap, for example, has like monthly mental health talks as well, which I think is super powerful. I know a leader at Google really well, and I know that he has, I think, quarterly kind of mental health conversations, and usually he kicks it off with talking about how he's been doing in order to, you know, make people more comfortable and open up to be more vulnerable about their own experience as well. So I think we need to lead by example, and you know, and just talk about it, not wait for someone else to start, you know?
Yeah, we had a launch with a large corporation where the leaders got up and actually shared their own mental health stories and or their family stories. And the chief human resources officer decided to do it annually. And now they have quarterly workshops. I think I mentioned this in the last one. And you know, to what you just said, I'll add on real quickly, in those workshops, it's so effective to have like workshops on resiliency and having tools to lead with. Meditation tools to leave with, stress reducing tools to leave with when you leave the meeting. So you actually have tools and techniques to utilize when you've left that workshop or that meeting, something as a takeaway for team members. So I love that. I mean, or mindfulness, you know, what are ways you can be mindful? Again, we talked about journaling, feeling gratitude, living in the present. So just even, you know, affirmations, I mean, just different things, but leaving with those tools and techniques at the end of the meeting, you know, and that's different than having just a meeting to talk about how everybody's doing. So it's kind of like two different types of meetings, right? Both very effective. If you schedule them on a day and time, that way people ready like lunch and learn, a scheduled day and time during the month, that's very effective too, because people know it's coming and they're excited, like, oh, I get to learn about resiliency and adapting and, you know, getting through change. And so those are very effective in the workforce.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, I just want to summarize before we jump off today from today's podcast episode. I want to kind of summarize for people that are listening right now and they are identifying with some of the symptoms that we've talked about. Like, what is the first steps that they can take, right? Obviously, you know, if you are identifying with a few things and you feel like it's really severe, like go talk to a doctor, right? And just, you know, have an honest conversation with your medical point of contact and then, you know, discuss with them what is the best way forward. If you maybe know someone that you can, like maybe you're hearing this story and you think, oh, of a person that is kind of showcasing these signals, have a conversation with them about it. Maybe share this podcast episode with them and tell them, hey, you know, this super interesting educational podcast about different mental health issues or mental health states, right? And I think that's really important. And then, yeah, I think, you know, one of the biggest learnings for me as well when I went through it was that I didn't even have to talk honestly with my employer about it. I just said that I have to go on a medical leave. And I think that's sometimes really scary for people as well. When you are in that vulnerable state, you are afraid to obviously share what you're going through. And sometimes we're not ready for that in the moment. And for me, knowing that I didn't actually have to say what was going on with me, to just be like, I'm going on a medical leave and, you know, I don't have to justify what I'm doing, was
absolutely right
at the time, very powerful and really helpful for me to cope with it and deal with it myself before opening myself up to others.
That's a great point. I'm so glad you brought that up. You do not have to share what you're going through with anyone. If you feel like you need to take a leave, you empower yourself to take that leave. Yeah. And, you know, of course the best scenario would be able to be transparent with your leader. If you're going through something, before you get to that point, you need to take some time off, mm-hmm. which I've done with my employees when I was in corporate. You know, but as a leader, what I did, I noticed her body language. It's not what she was saying or not saying. And she came to my office and I said, you know, are you okay? And she just broke down crying. I said, you know what? Do this for me. Take 2 weeks off. I'll delegate all your stuff out to others, and I myself will do your work. Take as much time as you need, and come back when you're ready. And she came back in 2 weeks, and she was totally back to herself. So I think it's important that leaders also and coworkers need to, you know, notice when someone's a little off. And again, it doesn't have to be what they say or don't say. It could be their body language. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, you know, we as leaders and coworkers need to be more, you know, pay attention more to what our coworkers are going through and vice versa.
Yeah, for sure. Kristen, this was such a wonderful conversation. I'm very excited that we had this and that we could share all our stories so openly and hopefully educate people about different mental health states. And so thank you so much again for being here again. And I really, you know, if people have more questions, if you would like Kristen and I to hop on a podcast again, super, super happy to do it. Send me the questions and we'll chat more about maybe specific questions you might have in terms of anything.
Absolutely. Love to do that. And thank you so much for having Julia. This is such an important conversation. I appreciate that you're on the forefront of this, and I appreciate you having me on your podcast. I'm so honored. And I really hope your listeners get something out of our conversation today. And again, I'd be happy to hop on another podcast if anybody has questions. Love to do that.
Sounds great. Thank you, Kristen. Have a nice day.
Thank you. You too.